Welcome everyone to this live session at Wide Moat Investing Summit 2022. It is a great pleasure to welcome returning MOI Global instructor, Scott Miller, founder of Greenhaven Road Capital, a boutique investment partnership that seeks out off the beaten path investments, modeled after the early Buffett partnerships. The firm is built on the belief that a focused investment manager can outperform an index by limiting fund capacity and concentrating exposure on a few great ideas over a long time horizon. Experience as an owner-operator of businesses influenced Greenhaven's approach toward partially owning companies rather than merely picking stocks. Prior to founding the firm, Scott co-founded Acelero Learning, serving in a variety of roles over a decade, from CFO to CTO to Chief Strategy Officer to his current role of board member. Acelero Learning has grown from 3 people in an office cube in New York City to 1,500 employees, serving 5,000 children across 4 states. Additionally, Scott managed a manufacturing business with responsibility for hiring, firing, planning inventory, negotiating with suppliers, and acquiring customers at a reasonable cost. Scott holds an MBA and a master's in education from Stanford University. And it's been a great pleasure having you with us in the past, Scott. Your contributions have added tremendous value to the MOI Global community, and we're grateful to have this opportunity again today. So with that, I'd like to turn it to you for the presentation. Please go ahead.
That was a great intro, John. I may have you intro to my kids, so detailed. John, before we get started, I just want to thank you for the community you're building. I'm a long-paying customer and fan of your work. And for those of you that may or may not get it, John puts out a Saturday email with that I think is link for link, the best thing I get every week. And so, John, thank you right back. Let me give you guys just a little bit of John gave a probably more detailed background than I expected on Greenhaven Road. We're concentrated, been doing this for 10 plus years. We're a mix of special situations and high quality companies. And today I will present what I hope, what I consider to be both a special situation that is a high quality company. And I think the last piece is here. Look, I am 100% talking my own book. I eat my own dog food. I am the vast majority of my net worth is in my fund. My parents are invested. My in-laws are invested. My kids are invested. My best man for my wedding is invested. You know, this is very personal capital. And then we also have our largest group of investors is fund managers and former fund managers. So it's a eclectic partnership that I manage. I'm very grateful to do so. But, you know, just caveat, this is not what I'm presenting today is something I own, something I've been buying. This is not one of those situations where I'm, you know, sort of trying to exit or barely own any of it. This is what I would say is a real holding. Before we get into the details, I thought it might be helpful to do a small thought exercise. Let's just pretend for a second that this conference had been held in person, and whoever presented the worst idea last year has been murdered. I didn't present last year, so I survived, I guess. If we were trying to solve that crime, you know, how would we approach that? I think the first thing we would do is probably look for security cameras and then physical evidence, right? DNA and those types of things. But pretty quickly, we would get to wanting to look at the digital, the cell phones and computers of both the victim, as well as probably some of the prime suspects. And that activity is called collect and review. And digital devices have effectively become gold mines in terms of from an investigative perspective. There's both the obvious stuff around like text information, emails, photos, contacts, but also most devices contain a fair amount of geolocation data that says, you know, effectively every time you connect to a Wi-Fi or a cell tower or take a photo, it's recording where you are and when you've been there. And so this information is very valuable, but it's also getting increasingly complex to access. So there's proliferation of devices and types of devices, and as well as complexity. And so as our digital lives and our real lives converge, this becomes very valuable. And our average government agency or police department has trouble accessing this information. The process needs to be digital, right? These are digital devices. When done well, it can speed up a process by a factor of 10. but there's also, as important in many ways as collecting the data, is doing it in a compliant and auditable way, right? So the ultimate goal of collecting this data often is to present it in court, and you need to show that you accessed what's allowable under the search warrant and didn't go beyond that, didn't violate things like attorney-client privilege. You need to have an audit trail. You need to be able to show who saw the data and when and how it was shared, et cetera. And so it's complex, it's important, and compliance and speed do matter. It's a large opportunity, this digitization of evidence. The company I'm going to present in a second, estimates it at $13 billion TAM. I don't know, that's probably high, but it's not a super niche opportunity. And so I'm going to present a SPAC. And not only that, an Israeli-based SPAC, which may be kind of two strikes against it. If you want to go listen to John's podcast or something right now, don't blame you, but I think it's pretty interesting. It was founded over 20 years ago, employs almost 1,000 people, has 7,000 customers. They've raised, $0 for growth capital to date. Okay, so, and they've generated over $300 million in operating cash flow. So typically when I say SPAC, you think of zero revenue, pie in the sky, science project, heavily promoted. And, this is not that, right? This is a business that's self-funded and has generated profits. The name of the company is Cellebrite. CLBT is the ticker. Yesterday it was a $5.08 stock. It's probably slightly lower today. Rough numbers, market capitalization, sub $1 billion, enterprise value, sub $750 million. This year will do roughly $250 million in recurring revenue. So even for the non-math majors out there, I think you can see we have, we're trading at sort of less than 3x recurring revenue. And that recurring revenue will grow, on the order of north of 30% this year. With, oftentimes you see that those types of numbers and you have low gross margins. Cellebrite has gross margins in the 80s. And again, as I said, it has adjusted EBITDA margins that they've guided to of 13 to 15%. So this is a company that can generate cash. It's at a pretty attractive multiple. And we'll get into the business a little bit more here. What do they do? I touched at a high level when we did the sort of thought exercise. Their business can really be divided into three primary buckets. There's the kind of the headlines on this slide. There's collect and review, right? That's the accessing of the data. Analyze and investigate, and manage and safeguard. And so, the analyze and investigate is where many of the time savings come from. And their flagship product there is something called Pathfinder, and it helps sort of establish, for example, when people are in the same locations at the same times, or people that have perhaps indirect points of contact. So let's say me and John both have somebody in our contacts and maybe we're communicating through them versus directly if we're sort of up to something nefarious, et cetera. And the manage and safeguard is the last piece, and that's around, for the audit trails and making sure that we're compliant and facilitating some of the sharing of information to further the investigations. So that's the product offering. Who are their customers, right? So very fully penetrated in many ways. So they don't, and many times they can't say the exact customer names, but they give, pretty good clues. Like 15 of the 15 cabinet level departments in the federal government are their customers. So, that includes the FBI and a bunch of other federal agencies. They've 27 of 27 EU national police departments, right? At a state and local level, they operate in all 50 states. On the right side of this slide, we have private sector. That's roughly 10% of revenue. So it's a small piece of their business that they are trying to grow, and you know that they're pretty well represented in the Fortune 500 and large companies there. So this is a, after 20 whatever years, this is a highly adopted product, right? And oftentimes Cellebrite is the term used to crack a cell phone. Their customers are buying more. So they've had 13 quarters of net revenue retention above 120%. So they have single digit churn rates. I think the last quarter was 9%. It's been lower at other points, but they have, they've never lost a strategic account. But so they basically are selling more into their existing base every quarter, which is a pretty healthy dynamic. And I think is speaks well to the efficacy of their sales and marketing spend. I think just as a data point, depending if you're a generalist or, a best in class software company has net revenue retention in the 130 range. And, these guys have been above 120 and we're not paying anywhere near a best in class multiple for Cellebrite here. In terms of growth opportunities, I think they're, four places where future growth will come from. It's upsell, cross-sell, right? The number of seats and the products purchased by agency, right? Private sector is 10% of revenue. They think it should be 20. There's new products, so they have a pretty complete offering, but there are siloed offerings that they will likely develop. And there will likely be acquisitions. They've done a couple to date, but they have $175 million in cash on the balance sheet. And they've talked about, acquisitions, it'll increase the size of their TAM, fill out an end-to-end solution, improve time to market. So they're making a buy build decision. Part of it is how long it will take them to develop it and get it to market. And they've also talked about, making acquisitions of adjacent products where they'd really be buying a customer base in the private sector to cross-sell into. So, there are a lot of ways that they can sustain growth. And I think the primary one will be the upsell, cross-sell and acquisition, but we'll see over time. They've given guidance of, the guidance here is here on the screen. I think the piece I'd like to just sort of highlight for folks is that they're going to spend, roughly 30% of revenue on sales and marketing and, roughly 26% on research and development. And so much of this is growth related. They don't break it out exactly the way I would in terms of growth CapEx versus maintenance CapEx, but they're clearly running some growth CapEx through the income statement. And so you have, what's trading at a teens multiple, a sort of high teens multiple of EBITDA. If you decided to slow growth, you could easily be, I think, sub 10 times EBITDA for what I think is a really high quality company. So, I don't think growth would go to zero in that scenario either. But so, they're basically doing a trade-off between growth and profitability. And they really do have some big levers to pull if they wanted to in terms of improving profitability, in terms of they're spending so much on sales and marketing and R&D that could be cut pretty easily. I think this is the Wide Moat Conference. And, I think if anyone who's a fan of Hamilton Helmer, I think the scale is really where Cellebrite benefits from. It would be their power, I think, or one of their primary powers in his framework. They've spent, roughly $200 million over the last 3 years in R&D. So it's not particularly easy business to crack. I mean, it would take some capital, but they can handle over 30,000 variations at this point of devices and operating systems. And, if you think about law enforcement agencies want complete solutions, right? It's not so great if you can only crack a quarter of the phones out there. And so and that complexity and number of devices and variations will only grow with time, right? It's not getting easier. And then there's another piece that is, I don't think obvious kind of at first glance, but because of both their kind of scale and longevity, they have provide training and certification that basically people use to help validate and build up the evidence that is being presented in court. And so, you know, it's you know, the person is Cellebrite trained, certified, et cetera, and they can prove the chain of custody, et cetera. All of this is meant to improve the credibility of the offering. And that is hard for someone to just create overnight. I think another point I want to make about this business is, you might have noticed there's some concerns about the economy right now. This is a largely recession resistant business. I wouldn't necessarily say recession proof, but the end customers are government agencies and they're not consumers. So I put that in the plus column. It's not really discretionary even for the government agencies, right? They having no solution is not really a viable option for agencies. They have to be able to collect and manage this data. The company has not really taken price yet. And again, I think looking at how high their gross margins are, how high their net revenue retention is, low churn, they, I think, clearly have the opportunity to take price. But that they haven't yet. So that if in a recession we can demand it, they might do that for goose growth a little bit. And you know, the Cellebrite expenses are a tiny fraction of the overall budgets for these agencies. And in a scenario where they're trying to really reduce expenses and they're going to go to they'll have to go to personnel. And you know, basically Cellebrite allows them to leverage a smaller workforce. And so, you know, we'll see. They're certainly better positioned than most for a recession. They're certainly not a beneficiary, but I think they're more resistant than most. There are four risks that you know, think people talk about, or I've seen highlighted with Cellebrite. There's a fear that they will lose the ability to access phones. So that comes and manifests itself in many ways. You know, part of it is if phone technology has changed, one of the ways they access phones is through the ports, and the removal of ports will make it harder. But this has been a cat and mouse game for, you know, going on two decades, and they've been able to keep up. And so that may change over time, but, you know, agencies still need the ability to access these phones and data. If there becomes a new generation that are harder to access, they'll still need to access the older ones. And then, you know, again, I think there's a game of cat and mouse. It's highly likely they will be able to catch up. There's a concern that the Google and Apple will be mandated to put a backdoor in the phones for access for government agencies. That's a possibility. There's still the sort of, what do you do with the data and how do you manage it, et cetera. And so I think that would be, I don't think that is by any means a death knell for Cellebrite, but people talk about that. And by the way, I mean, I think those companies are, certainly Apple has been fighting that vociferously. And so it's by no means a done deal. There's a concern, particularly last summer, there was a big movement to defund the police. And in reality, I think police budgets have been growing. But you know, if there are no police, there's probably not a lot of Cellebrite cross sells and upsells happening. So I think you got to think about that. And then there's instances where the product has been misused. There's an article out, I think, today about Russia misusing Cellebrite. There's used equipment has been sold from time to time, in different venues. And so, you know, the sort of nightmare scenario is the dictator uses the Cellebrite to break the cell phone of the journalist or whatever. And, you know, bad things happen from there. And so there's certainly a risk there. It is not their core business, right? I mean, their core business is selling to the good guys. They have some safeguards in place. And I mean, that is where all the revenue, the vast majority of the revenue comes from. And, you know, ultimately good guys need tools. And so there is a possibility of misuse and abuse. They've put some safeguards in place. They can presumably put more in place, but you know, I think the flip side of it is if you go on their website and you can watch a video of like the Seattle Police Department and their sex crimes unit and how they use, you know, Cellebrite to help with prosecuting, you know, people that are picking on kids for sex crimes. And like good guys need tools. And, you know, I think ultimately, you know, Cellebrite will be continue to be purchased and there may be some increased restrictions on who can buy it. But, you know, I don't view that as certainly as a terminal risk. You know, I think it may impact whether ESG funds want to invest or not. And, you know, again, I think it's a tool for good guys, but I can see the other side of it. So just a couple of summary slides here. I think of it as on a quantitative basis and a qualitative basis. On a quantitative basis, just to kind of review, it's capital efficient. These guys have never raised growth capital. It's profitable and trading at, you know, 3x recurring revenue that's growing 30% with net revenue retention, you know, north of 120% for 13 straight quarters. And 90% of business is from government, which is, you know, tends to be quite stable. And I think they could, you know, flex profitability almost immediately if they wanted to by, you know, reducing R&D and sales and marketing. I don't think they're going to do that, but I do think that they have that option. And, you know, I think just here at the bottom, if you guys have, I know John has a great audience. If you guys have other companies with these attributes, send them to me. Scott at Greenhaven Road. I'd love to look at them. I'm not seeing a lot like this out there. And so that's why I chose to present it, because I felt like it was kind of pretty easy to understand on a quantitative basis. From a qualitative perspective, it's the scaled provider. Agencies can't do this on their own, right? I mean, you know, maybe our national security agency in the US can, but, you know, your typical law enforcement agency needs tools to break the phone, access the apps, access all the information, put it in sort of a package that is useful and digestible and analyzable. And so, you know, and that's not going away, right? There are only going to be more devices, types of devices, types of apps. You know, they've now, you know, there's now this whole layer of cryptocurrency, right? Is another kind of digital world that these guys have to try and navigate as well. And so you have what is a small cost relative to the overall investigative process that, you know, is, and you have undersourced investigators. I mean, just to give you one sense as we wrap this up, they estimate that there's typically a 3-month backlog on cases and 50% closure rate, right? So you have in aggregate, you know, overworked agencies solving half the crimes that they're supposed to, right? And so I think in this context, you have Cellebrite, which is providing a valuable tool that they can't do on their own. And, you know, I think offer quite a reasonable price. So John, that's all. Terrific. Questions.
Thank you so much, Scott. Really appreciate you outlining the thesis here for us. I see a few questions already in the queue and would just encourage others to submit their questions as well. Here's the one that we could start with. How did an Israeli SPAC come across your radar?
Yeah, that's a good question. We look at most SPACs, many SPACs, for why we're looking at all the SPACs. You know, I think SPACs as an asset class they're a source of interesting shorts, right? There are perverse incentives and, you know, so if you want a basket of shorting SPACs, that's great. Like, I'm all for it. You know, my belief is that, you know, in the 500 plus, 700 plus active SPACs, there should be, you know, 2, 3, or 4 that are interesting. And I think this is one of them. And I think, you know, part of like the typical SPAC has, the typical SPAC, or the most egregious ones have, you know, zero revenue, zero sort of hope of revenue in the short term. And they're accessing the public markets, particularly sort of in a feverish time we had where, you know, they felt like they could get a better valuation in the public markets and, you know, sort of a capital arbitrage game. The history of Cellebrite is an interesting one. It was owned and it's still 50% owned by a Japanese company, but it was 100% owned by a Japanese company. It was 50% owned by a Japanese company who had an activist involved. And so, you know, they basically wanted a way to list it to highlight the value of the asset, right? Like they weren't trying to sell, right? So, in this case, Sun Corporation, which was a Japanese company, rolled 100% of their equity. They didn't take any chips off the table in the SPAC process. So, and then I think the SPAC sponsor is also interesting. It was a guy, Adam Clammer, who used to do growth investing out of KKR. And so I think you have, I'm a KKR shareholder and I guess fanboy, if you will. And so you had, you know, a combination of Adam Clammer and sort of a seller that made sense, right? They weren't trying to take cash out. They were just trying to highlight the value of it. And, you know, enlisting in the US what made sense also, where they thought they could get a higher valuation than listing in Israel. You know, I think that that part of the thesis may not have worked for them yet, but, you know, so that's a long way of saying I look at a lot of SPACs. This is in the sort of very small handful that I think is a really good business and just happened to go public via SPAC.
Terrific. Here's another question. How long has the government been a customer? How do we know they will not upgrade when a new technology is developed? Are there any meaningful competitors to be considered besides Apple, Google backdoors?
Yeah. I actually don't have the customer data like on adoption dates of specific agencies. They're long tenured customers. Now, I actually have a slide in the appendix of competitors. And, you know, I think the short answer is this is the company's version. And there's another one in the appendix that has, you know, I think what Cowan said in terms of who they thought the customers were. But some agencies use, there are instances where people use multiple providers, and so it's not always a matter of substitution. There, you know, to my knowledge, there is not a viable alternative on the collect and the review side. That sort of when we showed the products and offerings on the far left side, they are by far the market leader. On the analyze side, there are other options as well as on the safeguard side, safeguard and manage. But and I think one of the piece that I just think is interesting, as long as we have this slide up, they do have a partnership with Axon, and so Axon has an offering called evidence.com, which is about effectively managing evidence. In large part, it's the body camera footage that is generated by their product. So Cellebrite has a partnership with Axon. Axon is a 5% holder and invested, you know, $90 million in the pipe. And, you know, gun to my head, if I had to pick the acquirer of Cellebrite at some point, it would be Axon. I think it makes, you know, sort of the most sense from a number of levels. So
if they let up on R&D, what do you expect normalized profitability to be? And if they did that, what would be the repercussions?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's... we'll go back to this slide early on, right? Like, I mean, much of again, they won't give us the exact percentage and you know, we can estimate. Let's call it, I think half is probably a reasonable number is in terms of building out new products, right? And so I think the repercussions in the intermediate term are small, other than increased profitability, you know. But I think these are high ROI investments, and so I'm actually not advocating that they should do it. I think this is a case where we're sort of practicing, private equity in public markets, and we should, they're not going to need to raise capital. This is not an issue of them kind of burning through all their cash, right? They have a history of growing without raising capital. I think there's an opportunity in front of them. They have the captive customer base, and it's an opportunity to sell more into it.
Another question in the queue. Why has the company not used the cash balance to either buy back shares or the warrants associated with the SPAC offering?
I believe they have a small buyback. I think it is, there's a reasonable chance that they take an action on the warrants in terms of either buying them back or converting them to common. But I think that is right. I think in terms of capital markets, it's, I give these guys probably a 10 on in terms of their ability to sell into governments. And, I don't know, they're early in their evolution of navigating capital markets, both from a kind of communication perspective, as well as kind of seizing some of the opportunities. And so I own both the warrants and the common. I think they should be buying back both.
What is the long-term strategy here? Do you see the company staying with its current focus, or perhaps expanding, diversifying over time to maybe mitigate some of the risks, that you outlined?
Yeah, I think the long-term strategy is to get sold to Axon, but in the intermediate term, their form of diversification, quite frankly, is trying to penetrate the private sector further. They made an acquisition for kind of it's like a Google on steroids for finding personal information in public sources to effectively jumpstart investigations by looking for kind of public information available on both victims as well as suspects. And so, I think it is so that that's like a very related to the investigative process, right? But it's not, that's not collecting off of devices, right? There's also likely, stuff within the kind of crypto world and some of the financial tracking, et cetera, is again, kind of not really as much about being off device, but digital in nature. And I think those are the types of things that they will likely do as a form of diversification, but I wouldn't expect any kind of major departures.
Could you elaborate just a little bit on the management here, your confidence in their ability to execute, as well as the alignment with shareholders?
Yeah, I mean, the CEO is a reasonably large shareholder. I think he owns 4 million shares. I think they have a pretty good track record of execution. So from a kind of product and sales perspective, I think I have a fair amount of confidence, right? I think they can take price if they need to. I think the competitive landscape is favorable. I think the secular tailwinds are kind of blowing in their direction. From a fiscal management perspective, I think fortunately it is, not so hard to manage, right? I think they have pretty good visibility into the top line, and it's kind of largely about managing expense and investments. And then, I think there's the capital markets piece. They've done a bunch of conferences, and they've got some sell side research, but they're not really buying back stock aggressively. And we'll see. I mean, this is a unusually low multiple, I think, in my opinion, given the growth profile. And I think on some level we gotta, part of it is maybe a SPAC taint and some other things, but probably partly, management.
It's a low multiple of recurring revenue. How do you actually think about the fair value here?
I mean, you know, my honest thing is, I think this can get double and still be cheap. And so, I don't have a sort of specific, hey, intrinsic value here is exactly $14 or something like that. But, you know, I think there, and this is a company I'm happy to hold for 3 years, right? I think, you know, we're going to continue to see, attractive growth. And I think, right, my basic thesis, right, is that the multiple can contract more, right? It's possible, but we're getting down there, and we should get paid on growth likely going forward, as well as I would expect multiple expansion, right? Like, you know, that does happen eventually, or can happen.
Absolutely. Well, the risk reward certainly seems lopsided here. I think we will leave it there. Scott, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this investment thesis, answering the questions. And also thank you to everyone who tuned in as well.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. Really love what you do, and happy to be a small part of trying to contribute to it. So.
Thank you so much. Goodbye for now.
Bye-bye for now.